Midwest Jazz Collective presents the Benny Banach III Quartet for two shows at 7 and 9 p.m. on Monday, April 7th at Cafe Coda. Emmy-nominated trumpeter and singer Benny Banach III has proven to be that rarest of talents. Not only a fiery trumpet player with a stirring command of the post-bop trumpet vernacular, but also a singer with a sly, mature, naturally expressive delivery in the post-Sinatra mold. Third in a generational line of Pittsburgh jazz notables, Benny follows in the footsteps of his trumpeter and bandleader grandfather, Benny Banach Sr., and his father, Benny Banach Jr., who gave the young Benny his first professional experience. Benny's group includes Tyler Henderson on piano, Caleb Tabachman on bass, and Joe Perry on drums. More information at cafecoda.club. Midwest Jazz Collective presents the Benny Banach III Quartet for two shows at 7 and 9 p.m. on Monday, April 7th at Cafe Coda. You are listening to WORT Madison.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Radio Literature. I'm Melvin Hinton, right here on WORT-FM. We started listening to Poets on Record. In fact, the anthology is called Poetry on Record. I think I have that right, Poetry on Record. And we started with some poets actually from the 19th century, the 1800s. And you could barely make out some of the words they were saying. But we've advanced a bit, and we've reached a poet from, I guess he flourished mostly in the 20s, well, I guess the teens, actually, the 1920s, the 1930s. I believe he died in 1946. I'll look in a minute and see if that's right. And that poet is James Weldon Johnson, who was first introduced to me by my aunt, my mother's youngest sister, who was, I mean, to me, she was just, when I was a child, she took care of me, and she was, I guess, the next thing to God and my grandmother and my mother. And so anyway, let's not talk about Lou too much, because I'll start crying. But anyway, she introduced me to James Weldon Johnson and the poet who wrote "I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings," Dunbar. I can't get his first name straight, but Dunbar, Paul Laurence Dunbar. Those were her two favorite poets. Her favorite, of course, was Paul Laurence Dunbar, and then after him, James Weldon Johnson. And James Weldon Johnson was born in Jacksonville, Florida in 1871. That was a long time ago. And his father was a freedman from Virginia. He was not a slave. And his mother was from the Bahamas, the Bahama Islands. And so his upbringing was not the typical upbringing of the people who had been born in slavery or whose parents had been born in slavery. He attended Atlanta University, and he served as a principal of a school. He founded a daily newspaper, and he became the first African-American to pass the bar exam in Florida. He and his brother, Rosamond Johnson, I can't remember the first name. His brother was a musician. He played the piano and was also a composer. And they wrote what was called, and it's strange because I grew up not knowing this, and one day somebody referred to it, and I said, well, what's that? And it was referred to as the Negro National Anthem. And the song is a wonderful song, Lift Every Voice and Sing. And it was the official anthem of the, it became the official anthem of the NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And from there, I guess people just started calling it the Negro National Anthem. Johnson studied literature at Columbia University. In 1906, he was appointed by the president at that time, Theodore Roosevelt, to as a diplomat in Venezuela and then Nicaragua. And when he returned, he became the executive, chief executive of the NAACP. And during this period, which was very productive for him, he became one of the, some people consider him a precursor. Some others say he was an early member of the Harlem Renaissance. He published a lot of stories, a lot of poems, and he produced one of his most famous works. Well, he has several very famous works, God's Trombones, that was 1927. James Weldon Johnson wrote a very strange book, and he published it anonymously. Nobody knew who had written it. And but then some years later, he republished it, and he put his name to it, and it became a very popular book. It was called The Autobiography of an Ex-Colored Man. And Sandra Sandweiss, a professor at Princeton University, in her book, Passing Strange, mentions James Weldon Johnson a lot and talks quite a bit about the autobiography of an ex-colored man. James Weldon Johnson was not a believer. He was, I suppose, he was an atheist, but his parents were religious, and his father was actually a minister, a preacher of the gospel, as they called it. But he was an atheist, but he had to maneuver in black society at the time, so he couldn't go around announcing his religious or non-religious beliefs. In fact, he was asked to speak many times at black churches. And since he was a minister of the government, because at that time we used the European term minister more often than secretary, so he was a minister in the government, and people just assumed when black people who were not educated, and he was going to speak at the church, they assumed he was a minister, a religious minister. And sometimes when the minister found out that he was not a real minister, they didn't want him to speak, but apparently he was very persuasive, and he usually convinced them to let him go ahead and speak. Johnson died in a car accident at the age of 67, unfortunately, so maybe he would have written many more works if he had lived longer. And over 2,000 people attended his funeral in Harlem when he died. So let's hear one of Johnson's most famous poems, James Weldon Johnson, reading or reciting his poem, The Creation.
The Creation is from my volume, God's Trombones, read at Columbia University, December 24th, 1935, James Weldon Johnson. And God stepped out on space, and he looked around and said, I'm lonely. I'll make me a world. And far as the eye of God could see, darkness covered everything, blacker than 100 midnights down in a cypress swamp. Then God smiled and the light broke, and the darkness rolled up on one side, and the light stood shining on the other. And God said, that's good. Then God reached out and took the light in his hands, and God rolled the light around in his hands until he made the sun, and he set that sun a-blazing in the heavens. And the light that was left from making the sun, God gathered it up in a shining ball and flung it against the darkness, spangling the night with moon and stars. Then down between the darkness and the light, he hurled the world. And God said, that's good. Then God himself stepped down. And the sun was on his right hand, the moon was on his left, The stars were clustered about his head and the earth was under his feet. And God walked, and where he trod, his footsteps hollowed the valleys out and bulged the mountains up. Then he stopped and looked and saw that the earth was hot and barren. So God stepped over to the edge of the world and he spat out the seven seas. He batted his eyes and the lightnings flashed. He clapped his hands and the thunders rolled. And the waters above the earth came down. The cooling waters came down. Then the green grass sprouted and the little red flowers blossomed. The pine tree pointed his finger to the sky, and the oak spread out his arms, and the lakes cuddled down in the hollows of the ground, and the rivers ran down to the sea. Then God smiled again, and the rainbow appeared and curled itself around his shoulder. Then God raised his arm and he waved his hand over the sea and over the land, and he said, "Bring forth! Bring forth," and quicker than God could drop his hand, fishes and fowls and beasts and birds swam the rivers and the seas, roamed the forests and the woods, and split the air with their wings. And God said, "That's good." Then God walked around, and God looked around on all that he had made. He looked at his sun, and he looked at his moon, and he looked at his little stars. He looked on his world with all its living things, and God said, "I'm lonely still." Then God sat down on the side of a hill where he could think. By a deep, wide river he sat down. With his head in his hands, God thought and thought, till he thought, "I'll make me a man." Up from the bed of the river, God scooped the clay, and by the bank of the river he kneeled him down. And there the great God Almighty, who lit the sun and fixed it in the sky, who flung the stars to the most far corner of the night, who rounded the earth in the middle of his hand, this great God, like a mammy bending over her baby, kneeled down in the dust, toiling over a lump of clay, till he shaped it in his own image. Then into it he breathed the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Amen. Amen.
James Weldon Johnson, The Creation. When I guess about 2 months ago, I was looking for, I was trying to find what, I don't know, the best edition of God's Trombones. And I was surprised to see there were so many editions, old editions that had been re-edited, republished, and newer editions with prologues and introductions. One had an introduction by Maya Angelou, in fact. So I had a hard time choosing. And I ended up buying two editions, and then I got two different ones from the Madison Public Library. So if you're interested in reading God's Trombones, which is well worth reading, you can find them easily. God's Trombones with The Creation by James Weldon Johnson. Let's go on to another poet that we heard from last week, but I think we need to play that poem again. I'm sure some people were saying, "What in the world am I listening to?" And that poet, of course, is Gertrude Stein. She was born in Allegheny, Pennsylvania in 1874. I know that seems like a long time ago for a lot of people, but you know, time passes quickly. Her family was a wealthy German-Jewish family. They immigrated to the United States from Germany. Her mother died when she was 14 years old, and her father died when she was 17. So she became an independent woman at the age of 17. She had a brother. She attended Radcliffe College. And sometimes I think, you know, it's too bad that the women's colleges have sort of been eclipsed. Most people don't know the history and how distinguished some of these women's colleges were in I'll say before the middle or late 20th century, and Radcliffe is one of them. She attended, but she didn't get a degree. I suppose she still needed two or three courses, something like that. That's very common in the United States and in other countries as well. She left Radcliffe. She enrolled in the medical school at Johns Hopkins University. She studied medicine for 4 years, but she never received her degree there either. In 1903, she and her younger partner, Alice B. Toklas, moved from San Francisco to Paris. And Alice B. Toklas was her secretary, but she was also her partner. They lived in Europe for over 30 years. And during World War I, they volunteered driving supplies to hospitals in France, where they were living, of course. She had a famous apartment on the left bank where she entertained really people from the literary elite who either lived in Paris or came through Paris, Hemingway, and of course, Pablo Picasso was one of, excuse me, Pablo Picasso was one of her intimates. And she apparently is the one who coined the phrase, sorry, coined the phrase, the lost generation. And I'll leave it at that because we want to listen to her poem. Can you tell us the title of that poem, Daniel? Sorry.
Sure. The title of the poem is If I Told Him, A Completed Portrait of Picasso. And I can go ahead and play it now unless... All right.
Yes.
So here we go.
If I told him, a completed portrait of Picasso. If I told him, would he like it? Would he like it if I told him? Would he like it? Would Napoleon? Would he like it? If Napoleon, if I told him, if I told him, if Napoleon... Would he like it if I told him, if I told him, if Napoleon? Would he like it if Napoleon, if I told him? If I told him, if Napoleon, if I told him? If I told him, would he like it if I told him? Now, not now, and now. Now, exactly as kings. Feeling full for it, exactitude as kings. So to beseech you as full as for it, exactly or as kings. Shutters shut and open, so do queens. Shutters shut and shutters, and so shutters shut and shutters, and so shutters, and so shutters shut, and so shutters shut, and shutters, and so shutters shut, and so, and also, and also, and so, and so, and also. Exact resemblance to exact resemblance, the exact resemblance, exact as a resemblance. Exactly as resembling, exactly in resemblance, exactly a resemblance, exactly and resemblance. For this is so because. Now actively repeat it all, now actively repeat it all, now actively repeat it all. Have, hold, and hear actively repeat it all. I judge, as a resemblance to him. Who comes first? Napoleon the first. Who comes to? Coming to. Who goes there? As they go, they share. Who shares all? All is as all, as yet or as yet. Now to date, now and date and the date. Who came first? Napoleon at first. Who came first? Napoleon the first. Who came first? Napoleon first. Presently. Exactly do they do. First exactly. Exactly do they do too. First exactly and first exactly. Exactly do they do, and first exactly and exactly, and do they do, at first exactly, and do they do, the first exactly, and do they do, the first exactly, at first exactly, first as exactly, at first as exactly, presently, as presently. He, and he, and he, and he, and he, and he, and as he, and as he, and he. He is, and as he is, and as he is, and he is. He is, and as he, and he, and as he is, and he, and he, and he, and he. Can curls, quote, quotable, as presently, as exactitude, as trains, presently, proportions, presently, as proportions, as presently, father and father, was the king or room, father and whether, was there, what was there, whether and in there, as even say so, one I land, two I land, three the land, three the land, three the land, two I land, one I land, two I land, as a so, they cannot, a note, they cannot, afloat, they cannot, they dote, they cannot, they as denote, miracles play fairly well, a well, as or as presently. Let me recite what history teaches, history teaches.
And let me remind you that the title of that poem by Gertrude Stein is If I Told Him, A Completed Portrait of Picasso. Of course, it goes without saying that Gertrude Stein was an experimental poet, but she did write some things that even traditionally minded readers might find interesting. So it's worth a trip to the library or the library. Maybe the bookstore as well, to look her up and read some of her poetry. Her most famous book is the autobiography of Alice B. Toklas. Alice B. Toklas, as I said, was her secretary and her intimate partner for most of their lives. And she wrote this book. I've read it, and it's a very interesting book, and it's very comprehensible. It's not anything like the poem that you just listened to. But of course, she wrote so many things. She was very interesting, Gertrude Stein. Another poet, Robert Frost, was born the same year as Gertrude Stein, 1874. He was born in San Francisco, and he lived there until he was 11, and then his father died of tuberculosis, and the family moved to Lawrence, Massachusetts. And it's interesting to think that he was born in San Francisco, because we think of him as the quintessential New England poet. Robert Frost is Mr. New England, so to speak. And he met his future wife in high school. They were co-valedictorians. They graduated at the top of their class, the two of them. So they were both valedictorian. And then they started college. He went to Dartmouth College, but dropped out before the first year was over. She went to another college. I don't remember right now which college it was. He dropped out, but then later he went back, a year or two later, he went to Harvard. He didn't go back to Dartmouth, he went to Harvard. But he dropped out of Harvard as well. I'm not sure if he eventually got a degree from Harvard or not. I'm sure he had an honorary doctorate from Harvard at some time in his life. Well, he proposed to his future wife when they were in college, I guess, and she turned him down because she said she wanted to finish college. And after she finished, they got back together. He proposed again, and she accepted. Robert Frost had a life filled with tragedy, because one of his children suffered from mental illness. Two or three of them died at very early ages. In fact, it seems to me that only one actually survived into productive adulthood. His wife died long before he did, because his wife died in 1938, and he lived on into, 60s, 70s, 80s. I'm not sure exactly when he died. They had six children, and as I said, their life was really tragic. Interestingly, Robert Frost could not get his poetry published in the United States. He had two or three poems published, and that was all. He tried and tried and tried. They moved to England, where he got his poetry published easily. He moved back to the United States. He and his wife moved back, and the magazines, even those that had rejected him before, were approaching him to get to his poetry be published. And so this is so interesting. He decided the Atlantic Monthly wanted to, were almost begging him to for poetry to publish. So he submitted to them the same poems they had rejected years before. And of course they published them. So Robert Frost, let's listen to his poem, The Road Not Taken.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same, and both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
Robert Frost, The Road. Robert Frost, The Road Less Traveled, one of his many, many famous poems. Rob, I remember when I was a child, when I was an adolescent, in my mind, there was Shakespeare, then there was Robert Frost, then there were all these other people, whoever they were. But everybody knew Robert Frost. I mean, people who never read a poem in their lives, they knew who Robert Frost was and knew about his poetry. Even they had heard it, somebody else recite it, or they had read it in school. And I remember my teachers talking about Robert Frost. And of course, Robert Frost was the first poet to be asked to compose a poem for a presidential inauguration, for the inauguration of President Kennedy in 1961. And it seems that it was during the daytime, and there was a lot of sunshine, and he couldn't make the words out because the sun was shining in his face or on the page. So since he couldn't read the words on the page, he just recited a poem, one of his poems that he knew by memory. So, and we're almost out of time, but let me say that Robert Frost is one of the most distinguished poet of all time. He received more than 40 honorary degrees, and I'm sure one of those was from Harvard. He received 4 Pulitzer Prizes, and he received the Congressional Gold Medal. So, you know, he was just so distinguished, and Americans were proud to be associated with a poet like Robert Frost. We're proud that he was American. I have a quote here from two quotes of Robert Frost. He said, "The ear does it," talking about poetry. "The ear is the only true writer and the only true reader." And he also said that he would have written on his headstone, "I had a lover's quarrel with the world." That's Robert Frost. And we'll see you again next week on Radio Literature. Thank you, Daniel MacArthur, for engineering. See you next week.
You've been listening to Radio Literature, a weekly program on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. We are listener-sponsored community radio. Join us again next Thursday at 7:30 for more features of local, national, and international interest.